believe the things I see. The path that I have chosen now has led me to a wall. And with each passing day, I feel a little more like something here was lost. It rises now before me, a dark and silent barrier between. All I am is all that I would ever want to be. It's just a travesty, towering, marking off the boundaries my spirit would erase. To pass beyond what I see, I fear that I may be too weak. And those of you who've seen it through, to glimpse the other side. The promised land is waiting, like a maiden that is soon to be bride. The moment is a masterpiece, the weight of indecision in the air. Standing there, simple as the sum of all at sea, just a travesty. Rocking out the light and blinding me, I want to see.
Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is February 12th, 2024. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org. Click on a weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of the website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. All right, we're going to pick up where we left off last week in our scripture reading, and We're in the Gospel of John. Let me open up my Bible program here. We'll be picking up in chapter 3, I think. Hang on. Yep, chapter 3. Gospel of John, chapter 3. We started in a minute here, running a little late on starting this program. So we're in Gospel of John, chapter 3. Okay, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 3. There was a man of the Pharisees named Nicodemus, a ruler of the Jews. The same came to Jesus by night and said unto him, Rabbi, we know that thou art a teacher come from God, for no man can do these miracles that thou doest except God be with him. Jesus answered and said unto him, Verily, verily, I say unto thee, except a man be born again, he cannot see the kingdom of God. Nicodemus saith unto him, How can a man be born when he is old? Can he enter the second time into his mother's womb and be born? Jesus answered, Verily, verily, I say unto thee, except a man be born of water and of the Spirit, he cannot enter into the kingdom of God. That which is born of the flesh is flesh, and that which is born of the Spirit is spirit. Marvel not that I said unto thee, Ye must be born again. The wind bloweth where it listeth, and thou hearest the sound thereof, but canst not tell whence it cometh and whither it goeth. So is every one that is born of the Spirit. Nicodemus answered and said unto him, How can these things be? Jesus answered and said unto him, Art thou a master of Israel, and knowest not these things? Verily, verily, I say unto thee, We speak that we do know, and testify that we have seen, and ye receive not our witness. If I have told you earthly things, and ye believe not, how shall ye believe if I tell you of heavenly things? And no man hath ascended up to heaven, but he that came down from heaven, even the Son of Man which is in heaven. And as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, even so must the Son of Man be lifted up, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have eternal life. For God so loved the world, that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. For God sent not his Son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. He that believeth on him is not condemned, but he that believeth not is condemned already, because he hath not believed in the name of the only begotten Son of God. And this is the condemnation, that light is come into the world, and men loved darkness rather than light, because their deeds were evil. For every one that doeth evil hateth the light, neither cometh to the light, lest his deeds should be reproved. But he that doeth truth cometh to the light, that his deeds may be made manifest, that they are wrought in God. After these things came Jesus and his disciples into the land of Judea, and there he tarried with them and baptized. And John also was baptizing in Enon near to Salim, because there was much water there. And they came and were baptized, for John was not yet cast into prison. Then there arose a question between some of John's disciples and the Jews about purifying. And they came unto John and said unto him, Rabbi, he that was with thee beyond Jordan, to whom thou bearest witness, behold, the same baptizeth, and all men come to him. John answered and said, A man can receive nothing except it be given him from heaven. Ye yourselves bear me witness that I said, I am not the Christ, but that I am sent before him. He that hath the bride is the bridegroom. But the friend of the bridegroom, which standeth and heareth him, rejoiceth greatly because of the bridegroom's voice. This my joy, therefore, is fulfilled. He must increase, but I must decrease. He that cometh from above is above all. He that is of the earth is earthly, and speaketh of the earth. He that cometh from heaven is above all. And what he hath seen and heard, that he testifieth, and no man receiveth his testimony. He that hath received his testimony hath set to his seal that God is true. For he whom God hath sent speaketh the words of God. For God giveth not the Spirit by measure unto him. The Father loveth the Son, and hath given all things into his hand. He that believeth on the Son hath everlasting life, and he that believeth not the Son shall not see life, but the wrath of God abideth on him.
Okay, Jen, do we have any questions tonight?
Yes, John, we have a number. The first one I'll ask, even though it's, I could have just done it by email because it may be of general interest. It says, may I get in on the militia class, please?
Yeah, I guess if that, you know, someone did send an email and somehow got lost, they one might be the same person.
Right.
Yeah, if you get me, send me their email, and I'll, and do you have his phone number too? Or just the email?
He just sent an email.
Okay. Yeah, drop me an email, and I'll get it to over to Brent, unless you can make contact with him. I mean, I could drop it on Skype or whatever. So.
Okay, I still have his email address. Next question, then. Is there anywhere on NLA's website that explains the background regarding the Admiralty gold fringe flag? I was trying to explain to someone the difference between the two flags, but they were very agnostic about it and would like to see some written proof with history. There are many false claims stating that the gold fringe is just ceremonial decoration and enhances the flag's beauty.
Yeah, well, there is a there is some a title on the flag. Let me see if I can find that real quickly. Here it is, USC Title 4. So you can just, they didn't just search it out on the web, USC Title 4, and you'll get, and if you put PDF behind that, you're sure to get a copy of the USC Title 4 and get all the details. But the fringe on the flag identifies with Admiralty, so that is at sea. It's valid for its purpose. You know, there, it is true that they tried to lump us all under Admiralty law. They violated the Constitution, and they betrayed the Constitution. They betrayed the people back in 1934 with the 1934 Rules Enabling Act, and then in 1938 they created unlawfully. They created the Rules of Federal Procedure, and the states followed suit. They created their own Rules of Civil Procedure. Rule 2, combined equity and statutes, you know, equity and the law, I mean, sorry. So equity, which is code, statutes, regulations, and so on, which is written for, you know, people who work for government agencies or the government agency itself. Also people involved in commercial activity on the national end, of course, interstate commercial activity. On a state level, you know, they control that commercial activity in the state. But anyway, all of that is available, but the flag particularly is under Title IV. It is valid, but they have, again, brought us under civil law, because when they combined law and equity, they then titled it civil law, and therein is the problem. So I don't know if anybody really wants to make a big deal about it, especially if you're in a court. Okay, because they're not going to answer or respond to it anyway. But all that they've done is a fraud. So that's how we deal with it. We deal with all these things as a fraud. And they're guilty of treason at this point. All those who are participating in that are guilty of some level of treason. Of course, the creators and the hardcore people, individuals that are involved with this, they're guilty of treason at the highest highest state. All right, next question.
Okay, in regards to direct taxation, here in Pennsylvania, we have imposed on us a local tax known as the per capita tax. This is a direct tax just on being alive for those over 21 years of age, regardless of home ownership. It seems quite obvious that this tax is unlawful. Is this something whose jurisdiction is worth challenging?
Well, a capital tax is liable, but it doesn't sound like it's, it is lawful, but it doesn't sound like it's lawful from the way they're explaining it. Can you appreciate how this person is explaining? Are they saying that they're charging them a certain amount to pay a capital tax? Head on the capital. What do they call it? Cap.
Per capita? Yeah.
Because the way it's supposed to work, well, how is he thinking it's working? You're in Pennsylvania. Are you
right.
Familiar?
I thought it was only when you are working. But I could be wrong. But it's a fair amount of money. Yeah. And it is, I thought, related to your income, your wages.
Okay, that's an unlawful tax. They can't do it that way. What the only way that the federal government can collect money from the people through the states, particularly, let's say, is they got to go to the states, and the states have to apply the tax. And what happens is the state actually pays the tax, and the tax is paid, should be paid according to the population. So every 10 years, of course, they go through the counting. That's lawful, and then the state has to collect that tax in a lawful manner. They could do it through sales tax, there's lots of other taxes they can probably attach to it. They might be able to attach it to maybe fuel oil, gas. And I'm not too sure in the details on that, what is actually lawful on that. But I do know the federal government would require the state to pay per capita, so much per person within the state, and again, they have to find a lawful way to collect it. Collecting it through an income, through your income, is unlawful. That's the answer to the capitation tax.
They also have one on vehicles now to make more money, and it's a fixed flat fee of like $5 or $7 for the town I live in. Not all towns in the state have it. Would that be legal or lawful?
How are they collecting it per vehicle? They're saying, putting a gun to your head and say, pay it. Look, at all when, taxes are voluntary.
When you register your vehicle, you have to include that in the fee. The town says you own. Yeah, it's a flat rate for every registration.
Well, it has to be equal across the board for everybody, and it is a proper way to collect the tax, I think, potentially speaking. So,
okay.
But again, I'm not. We now have to think about, the vehicle itself, renewing your registration and that kind of stuff. I mean, I don't know if that is lawful. Again, that's something I never looked deep into, but it's something to consider. We have a right to travel. We use vehicles to travel. It does make sense, for instance, putting tax on gasoline, diesel oil, because that pays for a lot of the road tax, and tolls sometimes. That, again, is paying for the roads and the bridges. So that's all lawful. I think maybe that would be the proper place to tap in a tax. A couple of cents, because figure all the people that drive would using fuel oil and stuff. Whether it's for vehicles, cars, or for trucks, diesel. So again, those kind of taxes are legal. They're lawful.
Okay, next question. I just read an article on interest balancing, which is the way a judge judges decisions lean away from an individual's constitutional protections and lean toward the government's interest. Throughout the course for administrator, you cited Supreme Court decisions who balance the interest towards the individual's constitutional protections and lean further from the government's interest. In some of the right to bear arms cases, the balance leans toward the individual. My question to you is, do you recognize the interest balancing toward the individual in other federal cases as well? Did I lose you, John?
Yeah, sorry, I was muted. That last part of that I didn't really understand. Read that last sentence. Do I what?
Okay. Do you recognize the interest balancing toward the individual in other federal cases as well? That is, besides the right to bear arms, where they tend to support the individual.
Why don't we read the whole question again? Because,
okay.
And I'm not too sure what the question really is.
I just read an article on interest balancing, which is a way judges' decisions lean away from an individual's constitutional protections and leans towards the government's interest.
Hey, hold on a minute. It says interest balancing?
They call it interest balancing, I guess.
It
was a new term to me.
I'm not sure what that means, but go ahead. Continue.
Well, I think it just means they lean towards deciding in favor of the individual in some cases and towards the government in others.
They must always lean towards the individual and never towards the government unless it's obvious that it doesn't apply. But other than that, the purpose of the federal government ultimately is to protect our liberty, to protect the blessings of liberty. Judges, courts really don't have the power to fine or incarcerate. Okay. Of course, you could get arrested and held, depending on the type of a crime, and, they have to go through the process. They have to get the people's permission with an indictment if it's something that, they're caught in a robbery or something. If they're not caught actually, then they want to get the indictment first before they make the arrest. They have to get the people's permission. So if they're not getting the people's permission, then they can't go forward. You can't fine somebody anything because what happens, that's taking away something that somebody owns, like their money usually, of course, or their house to pay for it or whatever, their car, whatever they want to do, property. That's unlawful also. The only way people can lose anything taken away from them is through a court of law, and that's it. So, again, the process of protecting someone's rights is the norm by the federal, should be the norm by the federal government. It's not, because they're really maintaining status quo. So if you're going up against the institutions, you're probably going to lose because they're maintaining the status quo, especially the government. Every time you go up after the government, they throw you out of court under Rule 12. I'm in another battle with that. I've been in many of those battles. But I'm in a battle right now with that kind of a thing. Where they want to throw you out under Rule 12. We've got a lot of experience with that, I think, here at National Liberty Alliance. So, but going further, I'm not sure anything more on that question.
Okay, that was the last question, John.
Okay. All right, if anybody's got a question or a comment or a correction of anything here, *6 and 1 if you're on the phone to get into the queue, and if you're on a browser of some kind, there should be a button there to enter the queue. Actually, we do have a few people in the queue right now. So,
say, John, wouldn't Pennsylvania have already had a per capita tax in the first place, and now they have another one? So doesn't this most recent one sound just like an ex post facto tax, which would be unconstitutional?
Well, it would all be, because you can't, there's no such thing, if it's an income tax. You can, tax on things that you're selling. Sales tax is one thing. That is a lawful tax. But an income tax, no matter how they dress it up, if they're collecting it off of your income, they're stealing from us. They're robbing us. That's not proper. And they shouldn't need that much money anyway. And generally speaking, in the federal constitution, it is written that the states can do a per capita tax for the benefit of the federal government. In other words, the per capita tax that they would charge would be for the federal government. In other words, paying in some funds for the federal government to operate. And there's many other ways they do it also, that they get their income in order to run the federal government. But they get way too much You know, they seem to be giving away too much, so obviously they're getting too much. And they're definitely getting too much unlawfully. And, you know, it's something that they just never stop taking with. So, but there is no such thing as a per cap tax on an individual through, let's say, again, your wages or something. That's unlawful. Again, anything you can avoid. You can avoid buying things, and so you can avoid the tax. That's what you want to do. You know?
Yeah, and then as far as getting someone registered to the militia, if you probably have Brent's assistant, Joy, look in your emails, either you or Jan, for a message from Joy. She's the one, I think, that handles getting people into the course and not.
Yeah, I've got contacts for that, so I'll get that person in, you know, get them in connection.
Very good. I yield.
Okay, we'll take our first person here. Let's see, it looks like Tim, you got the mic. Go right ahead. What state are you in, Tim? Tim, you got the mic. You've been muted. Maybe you're muted on your side. I don't know, but you're unmuted on our side. Last call for Tim. Okay, we'll take next caller. Okay, and by the way, it's best to come in on an app or something. Some people coming, I wonder, if people coming on an app, they wouldn't show up their phone numbers. Is that correct, Jan or Eric? We would, if they're coming in on the phone, yeah, it's a wireless caller, for instance. We got one up in here.
It should show the phone number, I think.
But if they're coming in on an app, would it be it wouldn't show the number then? Would it have their name?
Sometimes it listens to the email.
Yeah. All right, well, any event, anybody coming in on the phone, you know, you can see the desktop. We do share the desktop from time to time, and you're not going to be able to see that on a phone. So it's best to come in on an app on a phone or come in on a browser. Okay, we'll take our next caller. Tim, last call for Tim before I move on. Okay. Zane, you got the mic. What state you from?
Hi, my name is Zane, and I'm from Michigan.
Go right ahead, Zane.
Awesome. Well, very nice to talk with you. I've just been getting into all this information and reading the book Meet Your Straw Man and Whatever You Want to Know, and it's very very eye-opening stuff, very cool stuff. It's really nice to learn your rights and understand, you know, the rights we were given in this country that I learned nothing about in school or anything like that. But my main question for you, what I really wanted, I read over it in the book, but I just wanted to know if you had any things for modern day times now to add to it or anything. I don't know even when this book was written, but for dealing with debt, my friend, he has a $10,000 debt with two different banks. Well, it's $5,000 with one and then $5,000 with another, and it made sense, everything in the book, how it breaks it down. I just wanted to know if you had anything to add to that and kind of exactly how to go about that.
Yeah, well, that book I didn't write. It doesn't come from National Liberty Alliance. I know the individual who took that, who put that book up there, they had stolen some work from us and is selling our work under different names. But the Meet Your
Straw Man,
the Meet Your Straw Man book, that particular book is, you know, I guess they just kind of sewed together a lot of things. Many, many years ago, but this is long before we put any booklets up, we were kind of following that process. But that's all, that whole straw man thing is all a fraud. It's not that the straw man is a fraud from the standpoint that what they're saying isn't true, because it is true. But the bottom line is how the government, what the government did to, you know, bring us to that kind of a process, all of that is the fraud. And it's much better dealing with this from the standpoint of the fraud and opposed to the standpoint of the straw man. You know, I do know somebody who did something, sent a bill to the IRS. Let me think of it. Was it the IRS? I'm pretty sure. I know it was the federal government. I'm sure it was the IRS. And they followed some kind of a process online, and they got a check. And they made a big mistake by cashing that check. And not many days later, maybe 3-4 weeks later, they broke down his door to arrest him. He happened to be away at the time. Last time I spoke to that person, they were still on the run. But he shouldn't have cashed the check. Because, again, the whole thing is a fraud. And, you know, there is the CESQ accounts. We understand all that. They claim that, you know, you have a certain value when you're born, and it adds up as you get older and so on and so forth. And when you die, the IRS, takes your CESQ account. If you try to take it, you know, that's another story. But I'm only aware of one person that actually tried to do something with it, and that's what happened to them. So I wouldn't mess with that. Anybody that owns debt, I think we're going to have what's called a jubilee coming up. They're not going to call it a jubilee, but it's kind of a jubilee. The real jubilee is it identifies with the Bible and identifies with salvation. But the idea of everybody, all debts being forgiven, again, it has a different context in the Bible, but people read something else into it. But this idea of a jubilee is where everybody, all debts are forgiven. Once the Federal Reserve goes down, and it will go down this year, and the IRS to exist, it will cease.
I believe you on that.
And they will cease to exist this year. It's going to be a whole new story, and all debts are going to be forgiven, especially mortgage debts, and people who have a credit card over high credit card, or whatever, just credit card debt. Lots of things. Some of it I'm not too sure of, but basically for every injury there must be, you know, some kind of restitution for that injury. And we're talking injuries in the trillions, and we're talking these people have trillions. They you know, the powers that be, so to speak, the New World Order, they control, I would guess, 90%, maybe more than that, of the economy of the world. They own all of the gold, the silver, property, all kinds of things, the banks, the whole works.
Mm-hmm. They control everything we see in here.
All that's going to be seized, and once they seize it, it's got to go back to the injured party. And who's the injured party? We the people.
Yeah.
There are some people that are concerned about the debt, you know, that the federal government's debt. That's nothing. That belongs to them. It's not us.
Right. And
so, but the bottom line really is that the whole thing is a fraud. But it needs to be lawfully. Common law can deal with this, can deal with all of this. And we've created a lot of cases that will be dealing with a lot of these problems. But they're just not going to be able to dealt with now. Once we get our courts of justice back, and we will get our courts of justice back once devolution plays out, then we'll get our courts of justice back, and a lot of things will be fixed. The Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, which was put together by National Liberty Alliance from every state in the union, has joined in on that. So we have members of every state in the union that joined in on that. And we've written papers, and we do have a paper ready to go at the right time. We've already tried to file it twice in the Supreme Court, but the United States Supreme Court. But it was blocked by some clerk out there, and maybe it's just not time for us to get it out. So we're going to recouch that particular paper, and we're going to really take it through as an indictment against the federal judiciary. And so the paper is pretty much written. We got to put it together in a little different way, a little different fashion, but it will be filed eventually. We will get our courts of law back. There are 20, particularly 20, maybe more, violations or things that have to change on the federal level at the federal court system in order to bring our courts of record back. And once we do that, then it's a slam dunk for every state because people can move their cases into federal court for cause, and it'll happen very quickly. Plus, at that time, you'll be able to pull oaths and bonds from these judges and take them to task on these things that they're doing, and if necessary, financially destroy them, and maybe they'll leave office. We can have them removed if they continue in an unlawful matter. We can go after them for indictments if that's what it calls for, depending on the situation. So I do believe all things are going to start to get better within the next year.
Awesome. Well, that's sweet. Well, that's really awesome. You obviously are very educated and know what you're talking about. It's really awesome to talk with you, and I'm glad the fraudsters at least led me to you, so that's one good thing about the book, I guess.
Yeah, you've got to be careful what people are teaching you on the Internet. It's very, very dangerous.
And people were, and it's funny because I was, like, talking about this stuff, and then I was looking into it on the Internet and, like, seeing how the CIA and everybody was talking about how it's completely, like, fraudulent. If you try to fight that, you're going to go to prison instantly. But so I was like, really, I'm glad I got to talk with you and really got to get the deeper understanding of it. So that's really awesome. Thank you for that. We did
crawl under that in the very beginning, going back about 15 years, you know, at least 15 years, where we were looking into that kind of a thing and trying to figure it out. But you only get yourself in trouble. There's lawful ways to do these things. There's common law ways. And the thing is, have patience, because by the end, we've suffered long enough. We can suffer.
Yeah, it's coming to a wrap, isn't it?
Well, it's coming, and just be careful. We do have a course online. It's under our educational tab. You can take the course, Court Access in the Common Law.
And, oh, I see. You got it right there. So, yeah.
Click on that. You can, you know, we give you a copy of the first part of the course. I think it's 3 hours long. Each one of our sessions was about 3 hours. And so it's... I think it's over 90 hours, maybe close to 100 hours in the course, and it goes through the whole process of law, talks about the IRS problem, we show the fraud on the IRS, and we lay out the common law with the rules of common law versus the civil law, which they've applied upon us, and the federal rules of civil procedure or whatever the state rules are. Each state has written their own rules. They will follow suit in the same way.
Wow. Well, there you go. Well, awesome. Well, it was so nice to talk to you. Thank you. And I will definitely do that, continue to keep learning. I'm glad I have your site at least, and now I know the place to go, not listen to this book. And, yeah, just keep educating myself and empowering myself. Obviously, it's a lot of information, but it's very, very interesting, and I appreciate your help.
Absolutely. It's things that we need to know about. If you go and you click on books by John Darash, you'll find all the books that we've written here that you can get on Amazon. These are handbooks. They're relatively cheap. But you can also get all these handbooks for free under Start a Committee of Safety. Come down to Handbook, Videos, and Tools. And those very same books you'll find in here. For instance, the Common Law Handbook, the Elected Officials Handbook, the Grand Jury Handbook, the Pettigrew Handbook, County Committee of Safety Organization Handbook and Charter, the Committeeman Handbook, and the County Committee of Safety Organizing Handbook. So all those are free downloads in PDF form, but sometimes people want them in a pocket handbook, and so we put it up on.
Yeah. I definitely get those. I like to have them in the physical copy, even though I like to do as least amount of waste as I can. Possibly do, because we've messed this planet up in a lot of other ways too, but yeah, having the paper physical copy is nice. But well, that's awesome. Thank you so much. What's your name again?
John Darash.
Okay, so you wrote those books. Awesome. Well, it was very, very nice to talk to you, John, and I'm sure you'll be hearing from me a lot more.
Yeah, get involved. Okay.
I definitely will.
There are other two books out there. One is Government by Consent. It's 8.5 by 11, so it's a large book. You know, it's hardcover, so it's durable. Mm-hmm. It's made for reference, you know, to be able to reference taking the country back, and also a lot of law in there, too, and stuff.
Yeah.
And then we have Court Access in the Common Law Handbook, which also is about 550 pages, 8.5 by 11, hardcover. And that's a good reference book if you're writing court case and doing different things. So, the course works with that book. So, and the book is much more involved than the book. I mean, the course is much more involved than the book, because I did the course after the book. But in any event, they do enhance each other.
Sweet. Heck yeah. And then I have one more little question for you. I'll definitely be picking both those up. Do you think it's a really good, like, to know, because I just picked up the Constitution, and really the Constitution and Bill of Rights, obviously that's a very, very big thing to understand and learn.
Right. Well, you're going to learn that if you go take government by consent, you'll learn a lot about the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Same thing with court access and the common law. Under our educational tab, we do have regular courses that are free. We have court access. We have a foundation study, and the foundation study is just videos, so there's no test or anything. You just take watch videos. It really gives a lot of insight and prepares you on a lot of the things that we teach here at National Liberty Alliance. We have a and that's free of charge. We have a Constitution course 101, which is an introduction to the Constitution. It's kind of a beginner's course. We have a civics course, which is a great course. It's quite a long course. The constitutional course does have multiple questions. If you get anything wrong, you can keep taking over and over and then move past that chapter. Free civics course also is a course that has testing on it. But it's all multiple choice. And the civics course really will give you some good insight on a lot of different things. American history, specifically in-depth understanding of our history of the United States. We have in there a lot of documentaries done by Edward G. Griffin. And we have about 18, maybe more, maybe he's got about 20. I know we have more up on our website, but I'm pretty sure we have most of them, if not all of them, in our civics course. Some of them doesn't necessarily apply in the civics course, so maybe we don't have all in the civics course, but it really gives you a good understanding on how we got to where we're at, how America was taken under control, and a lot of great information. Then, of course, the government by consent course. That course, we request that people become a premier member, and a premier member is it's given $5 a month or more. We have a free militia course, same thing, that's free. And we have a jury administrator accredited course. So we've got quite a few courses up there that you can take, and the few that require, again, that you be a premium member, again, we only ask for $5 a month or more.
Yeah, well, I'd love to do that. I'll definitely sign up for that. And, yeah, I'm going to keep empowering myself. I'm only 24 years old, so I think my generation, it's up to everybody, but we should be educated on this stuff. My generation just likes to sit and scroll on TikTok all day, and this kind of information is out here to really empower us and, take back our rights as people. So I think it's just really awesome what you guys are doing, and I appreciate it.
Well, our children have been demoralized. They've captured the minds of our children. They've done that for quite some time. They're really demoralizing us. And we need to take it back on the other side, and we're going to be pushing very strongly for a much better education for our children. We're going to really push for a required civics course, a required course on the Constitution, a required course on government by consent, and a required course on court access and the common law, how the court system works. People should have the knowledge of all these things. And so we have to push real hard. There's some things we have to do that's going to be hard for people to do, maybe, I don't know, but for instance, our children shouldn't have these smartphones. They're destructive. They're destroying their minds. Okay.
Yeah.
And we need to take them away from them. We need to give them. We can give them tools, but you have to control those tools. And if you don't control those tools, they can. The tool that can actually assist them can also destroy them. But definitely, schools should not allow children to come into school with their smartphones. They should not be able to.
Absolutely, I agree with that.
Go down to the office and use the phone, and that's that. If it's an emergency, other than that, wait till you get home.
Right. By the time they're 16, they've seen everything in the world on the internet, and no wonder suicide rates are so high because people think that they know everything, and then they get anxiety and depressed and all these things, and start getting on medications, and there you go.
They totally demoralize them, and they're demoralized before they can understand what's going on, and that's why they have the problems later on in life as they grow older. Kinds of problems.
That's exactly what they want, to keep generating that money wheel, that control wheel, honestly.
Absolutely.
It's crazy.
But anyway, we've got to take it back, and it's going to be for the people to take it back. Just for other things, we also have Bible studies. We have Wednesday night Bible studies at 7:30 for anybody interested. We'll be moving into the Gospel of Matthew next. But we're just finishing up on Revelation. We also have a lot of things on American history. We have lectures. We have Christianity in America. We got the Federalist Papers, the Anti-Federalist Papers. I mean, just the amount of education we have on this website, and these we get into the higher education also. And the amount of education, we take a lifetime to go through all of it. So, of course, people need to have the fundamentals, and the fundamentals is mostly what we have been talking about. And then, of course, whatever it is they're striking for to do within their own lives, you know.
Right, exactly. Awesome. Well, I won't take up any more of your time, but it was really, really awesome to talk with you, John, and I'm going to, get on there and get to learning.
Okay, good going. And
awesome.
We're starting committees of safety. Learn about that, and maybe you can get a committee of safety going in your county. And that's government by consent. We teach that in the book. We teach it online. We teach it throughout our website. We have an entire tab on that, by the way, on the Start a Committee of Safety. You could just follow the breadcrumb trails. Just click on that tab right there and then follow the breadcrumb trails.
You go. Take me right to it. Awesome.
Okay.
There you go. Awesome. Yeah, well, it was very nice to talk to you. You have a wonderful rest of your night.
Okay, you too. Thank you.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Okay, we're going to take our next caller. It's Brett. What state are you from, Brett? How you doing?
Hello?
How you doing, Brett? You got the mic?
Hi.
What's your
doing
state?
Well. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, the question I had was if there was any possibility to be connected with someone who has any experience or is experiencing going through the whole trust process.
Well, the best we could do is we can give you some educational materials. We don't have the time or nobody here really to be able to train anybody. Learning trust, you know, and you want to do it in common law trust, you got to be a little careful because, they got the civil law trust. And, if you talk to a lawyer, they're going to take you in a different direction and you're going to be much more exposed to some degree. But again, if you want information on that, you can go into Education Starts Here, and you come down to Law, and then click on Court Forms and Process. Now, under Court Forms and Process, you'll find a lot of information on creating a common law trust, okay? So we have a lot of information. So these are PDFs. Everything's downloadable. And there's also... You can create, there's a template for creating a irrevocable trust or a revocable trust. And, of course, under trust, you probably want the revocable trust. Well, it depends on what kind of trust you're creating, but we do have the forms up there where you can follow through. But you need to get educated, and you need to understand how things work. If you're going to open up a bank account with it, you're going to have to get an EIN number, so you're going to have to use, your own name, and whoever is going to set the trust up will use their name and their Social Security number at this point in order to get that trust going. But it is difficult when you go into the banks because they don't like to really open up accounts that don't expose the true ownership and everything. So it gets a little tricky.
Okay, does that fall, that part as far as the banks go, does that fall under this new Corporate Transparency Act?
Well, again, I'm not too sure about that new act, Transparency Act. Kind of makes me think they want to know everything about your business. Is that what that's about?
It talks about how before this year, starting with this year, that everyone and anyone that has a business or any type of entity, they have to disclose who all the owners and people who have beneficial interests that they have to file.
Well, again, that's in corporate situations. I've used corporations all my life, and I found them to be very helpful. To avoid certain things through corporations, so it works well. Trust is a whole different story. Trust is secretive. It's not anybody's business. It's not even the government's business. They don't need to know who the beneficiaries are. You can't violate that trust, if you're a trustee. So you got the creator of the trust, the one who starts the trust, okay? And then you got trustees are appointed, and they manage the trust. And then there's the beneficiary, the one who gets the benefit of the trust. Often families will do it, you know, for their children. There's all kinds of different reasons and ways to construct that. But that's all secretive. That has nothing to do with the government's interests. And if the law is trying to encroach on that, then again, it's just another violation of our right to privacy. But I think anything that is really, you know, repugnant to the Constitution will be able to be challenged after this coming year, after devolution plays out, be able to challenge it. And I think we're going to get our courts of justice back. It's going to take a little time. The biggest problem right now is the people themselves, because the people aren't educated. They don't understand how these things work. And they need to know this is all part of being free. You know, liberty is not free. It doesn't come freely. Sometimes you have to give your blood, you know, you have to pay for it in blood. Our founding father surely did, okay? But again, you know, we need to get involved. We need to put our time into our communities by going through the committees of safety and taking control of our government and actually exercising the unalienable right of government by consent. We the people can control every little thing the government does. We can control it. We can control the courts. We can control the political process. We can control all these people that we put in office. We can take them out of office. People just don't know how to do that. But it takes the people to get collectively together in order to do that. And we're not talking about, you know, millions and millions and millions of people. We're talking about a handful of people in every county. Let's say, you know, every county, if you got 30 or 40 people, I mean, that's a pretty good size amount. But you can easily get that up to 100, 200, or even more. We don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority that participates. And right now, it's all the criminals that are participating. It's time for the people to stop participating and get rid of these criminals. And if necessary, get them indicted. You know, we need to take back our courts. We need to take back our political processes.
Right. So as I was looking around, researching about trying to learn about the trust, I ran into something like a ministry trust. And have you heard of something like that?
Well, no. Well, again, I would imagine that a ministry would be a trust. I don't know. I definitely wouldn't think it would be incorporated, although they do, some of them. Are you talking about a church or some other kind of ministry, a ministry of bringing the gospel to the world, or what kind of ministry?
Yeah, well, it was saying that a ministry trust is one of the best trusts to have because of all the privacy that it allows and that you can operate freely under the Creator. But that anything that you decide to share with the world could be a ministry in itself.
Well, I guess you could say that. I think a ministry is presumed to be something religious and to bring something to the people. In Christianity, it would be bringing the Bible. And I guess other religion, they'd be bringing whatever their religion. But there's a lot of fraud out there, and it is true that people do use those kind of things. They maybe call themselves a minister, and meanwhile there's ulterior motives going on in there, something else. I don't think that's really a good thing or a just thing to really do, because, it's for the wrong purpose. The Federal Reserve is going to be gone by next year sometime, this year probably. That's going to be gone soon. Okay, so the Federal Reserve is gone. No more reason for the IRS, okay? ATF, gone. All of it, because that's connected with the IRS. That's going to be gone. And that's going to get rid of a lot of the problems that the people have. It's going to change everything. People will be able to have a weapon without having to go get some kind of a carrying permit or something of that nature. You know, nothing should be able to prevent an individual from going and exercising their rights. A lot of changes are going to be coming up. You know, who was it? Benjamin Franklin said to that woman coming out, I don't know if it's a true story or not, I think it is, but, you know, what kind of a government do we have? And he says, well, it's a republic if you can keep it. Obviously, the people haven't been able to keep it because they think they're a democracy. Now, it is true they've kind of pulled the wool over our eyes, and they've slowly, little by little, you know, kind of brainwashed us into certain things. They brainwashed us to believe that we're a democracy. My goodness, a lot of the good people that are doing things, President Trump himself still thinks we're a democracy. Think of the, you know, he's got a liberated mind. Think of his mind liberated if he understood the republic better than and realizes what it is. We are not even an inkling of a democracy. Just because we choose our representatives by popular vote, which no other how else can you do it? That's what not what makes us a democracy, you know. But that's what they want, and that's why they are constantly, you know, debating on how they're going to get rid of our guns and how they're going to get rid of our free speech. We're a problem to them. You know, that's democracy. That's what the people want. That's what they got. It's time to get educated, time to get re-educated, and it's time to educate our children. So the people have to step up. If they're not willing to step up, then they're going to lose it. And if they lose it, now this time it's their fault. You know, that's it, because it's being exposed right now. NLA is exposing it. We're laying out the truth. And I'm sure there are other people, I know there is, laying out the truth. But are they going to step up and take it? And if you don't step up and take it, then you don't deserve it. It's not free.
Wow. Well,
okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brett. Gerard, you ready to take the mic in a few minutes? I'll take our next caller. Mike, you got the mic. What's your state?
Hello, John. Mike in California.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Yourself?
Good. Complain no one listens, so I'm doing great.
Okay, that's the way to be. I've got a process question. I hired somebody to serve my papers, and I've got I'm concerned that it might not have been done correctly. Number one, I've got two documents, notice motion, and then verified show cause denial of jurisdiction. Do I need proof of service for both of those? Are they filed individually, or they just stack one on top of the other and serve them both together?
No, notice of motion does not have to be served by someone else. It's the beginning of a case that needs to be served.
Okay.
And you're going to want to look at the best person to use is the sheriff.
Okay.
The job that they do is serving papers, so they'll serve the paper for you and they'll do it right.
Well, that's what I will do next time. Live and learn, I guess.
There are professionals out there that have been around for a long time and they know what they're doing.
Uh-huh.
But just paying anyone, you know, you don't know what you're going to get. Usually I do most of my serving by mail, and I'll have someone else do the mailing and the witnessing of it and that kind of thing and get the papers written up. But again, a notice of motion, you don't have to go that route, but you do have to make sure everybody gets a copy, and everything is tricky. You want to serve it by, first of all, by certified, registered, you know, return slip mail. You definitely want to do that. I even when I file it with the courts, I do it the same way if I'm sending a motion in or something. So that you want to get, number one.
Okay.
But you also, when you send it to someone, any paper you send, you send two of them. One you mail, regular mail, and the other one you certify it. And you make the note to mail the both by certified and regular mail inside the, you know, the paperwork, which is the front page of the motion. So.
Okay.
Make sure you put a time in there, you know. You know, when is it to be answered by, or so many days. Usually with a, when you're doing a summons, which is the beginning of a court case, usually it's 30 days or 20 days, depending on how they've been served. I just do 30.
Right. I use 30 days on it.
Yeah. You'll have to put on, you'll have to put a date and a time, usually 9 a.m. in the morning. I was just going through this with Gerard. Usually you have to put it on 9 a.m. in the morning, and they'll give you, call the court up, and you're saying, you know, make sure that the court is open on a certain date. They're open all the time. You want to do it Monday through Friday, though, and make sure there's no holidays. And if that's the case, you want to do it maybe 20 or 30 days later and put the date and time when it's due to be heard. Now, if it's going to be heard in person, you can demand that. Okay, the court may approve that, number one. But, you know, if you put it in the paper, and the court will hear it by paper, generally speaking, But they could call for the people to come and, hey, let's talk about this in person. I doubt the court would do that often, but they could do that. But you or the other side can do that also. You can say, hey, I want this in person. So, but other than that, it's all paper, you know, back and forth on paper. And generally, that's how it usually works anyway. Nobody really often tries to change that much.
Okay. Now, how is there a way that I can verify that this was served properly? I don't know. I'm just.
Get a certificate of service, you know, a paper that was notarized, and who served it? Did you take it to a regular serving, a professional service?
Yeah, I took it to somebody that I found online and had good reviews, so I was comfortable with the person, but now I'm not so comfortable. He was told. Excuse me?
How much did they charge you?
$150.
Oh, well, you could have went to the sheriff for $40.
Okay. Now, do I go to the sheriff in the county? Do I need to, this is in a different county, do I need to drive to that county, or do I give it to the sheriff in the county I live in?
Well, you can call up the sheriff's office in that county and ask them if you could mail the paperwork to them, and I'm sure they'll accept that. So it doesn't have to be in person to get the paperwork to the sheriff.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so that's one way to do it. Or you can actually literally go. You do want the sheriff in the county where they're being served to serve it, because they can't serve outside their jurisdiction.
Okay.
But yeah, look at, and they're a professional service. I mean, they charge $50-$60. Some sheriffs charge less than others, but last time I used the sheriff is like $50 or $60 also. I've paid even cheaper than that, less than that at other times.
Uh-huh. Okay, but other than me guessing, there's really no way for me to verify that this was served properly.
Sure. All the paperwork should be coming back to you, certifications, everything, all the proof, and also reported with the court. Well, how long ago was this done?
It's been, the 24th of January, so 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
Okay, now by this point in time, they should have been served. The copy should have been filed in the court. That's part of their job.
I did have the processor file with the court, and he brought me back a stamped copy that shows that it was filed.
Yeah.
But I don't have anything that shows that the DA was served, other than there's a stamp on the front.
On that paper is the sworn affidavit of the individual who made the serving, saying that it's been served onto this person, this person, this person, and this person.
I don't have that.
Inside the paper in the court, it should say this. Okay, call them up and ask them if it's a problem. But did you get a copy from the court?
They gave him a copy that's stamped as filed.
Okay, now when you look at what does it say on the copy that's filed? What does it say on it? Doesn't it say all of the different items that were inside the serving? For instance, there'd be a summons, and then there'd be maybe the court action itself, and an affidavit, and maybe some memorandums.
Nope, none of that. There's no list. There's just a stamped. Excuse me?
Call them up and find out why that's not there, why you don't have that documentation, why it's not in the court. And
okay,
why you don't have.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, I guess the third time's a charm. This is the second serving. I thought I had somebody.
Well, look, you know what you might want to do? Go serve it again. It's not going to hurt. You're just giving them more time. That's number one. If you're really that concerned, take it to the sheriff and do it that way.
Okay.
It's the best way. It's guaranteed.
Okay.
You can't get a better server than the sheriff.
Okay. I think I will do that. Now, when I don't hear back from these guys, then I file a motion of default, correct?
Well, that would be, if they don't get back in a certain amount of time, then they got really difficult hoops to jump through, which is very rarely able to be won. But it can be from time to time. For instance, they have to prove that first of all, they have a real good reason. Okay? I had a lawyer in court one time, a U.S. attorney no less, and his reason was I was on vacation. I mean, that's not a good reason, okay? And they got other people, other U.S. attorneys they could have passed their work on, which they should have, you know, of course, obviously done. But anyway, you know, first of all, they have to have a good reason. You know, death in the family would be something like that. The other thing is they have to show that there's a good chance that they'll win the case. Okay, so they have to kind of prove that. So those are the two things that have to be done, and both have to be done in order to come back in and get back in from a default. Now, a default, usually, you know, you got to be careful with your defaults. You know, if you're giving them 30 days, you want to make sure you calculate into those 30 days. You know, it's 30 days from the time they receive it. And you can get that on the return slip or on the filing papers, you know, whatever that is. But you can get that. You'll know that date when they receive it. You don't count that day. But from that point forward, if it's 30 days, you count for the 30 days. Once they hit the 31st day, now at that point, you can put a motion in for a default and make sure you put your notice of motion in on that. And you serve it on all parties that need to get a copy of that and also file it in the court. And you have to make sure on that notice of motion that you have to have a point in time when they, you know, have to have time to respond. And generally, a lot of times, Monday is chosen as a regular 9 a.m. Monday on a day that's not a holiday, that's past the 30 days.
Okay.
Well, actually, before the 30 days. You know, if it falls on a Wednesday that the 30 days are totally up, then you probably do it on Thursday, I guess. But, you know, a lot of people I've seen on Mondays or Fridays. But it doesn't matter. The point is you want to put a time and a date on when that must be returned, when they have to answer, okay? So you're giving them that second time to answer now because now you're giving them the opportunity to show why they didn't default. And like I said, they have to prove those two things.
I see.
Okay.
Okay, very good. I appreciate your help.
All right, thank you. Gerard, you there? You want to take the mic? Okay, meanwhile, I'll go to the next caller. Okay, 559 area code number. What's your first name and your state?
David in California.
Go ahead, David, California.
Before I ask my questions, I had a couple of comments on some previous callers, if I may. The one gentleman that called about the credit card debtor's issues. I know that in those cases, the collection company does not have a copy of the contract, and all of those issued, whether it's mortgages or credit cards, all the debt issues revolve around the contract. And so one of the things that can be done is you ask them for the contract with your signature on it, and then you also can go after the attorney for the collection company as in regards to them having a license to practice law. I have a judge's decision out of a mortgage case in Florida where the guy was simply asked for the attorney's license to practice law. And, of course, no attorneys have a license to practice law. And in reading, the judge literally threw that attorney under the bus, getting that case out of her court. It's a great decision. So
let me ask you, obviously, well, what court was it? Was it a county court, state court, a town court, village court? What kind of a court was it, do you know?
I'd have to go back and look it up. It was in Florida. I don't know.
Okay, it makes a big difference on what court is doing it because decisions, you look at the only decisions worth bringing up in any case is the appellate court decisions on the state or federal level. Those are the decisions that have some merit. They use that as common law, which shouldn't be used as common law. I use them. Supreme Court rulings and things of that nature that maybe define the meaning of something or or makes clear what a particular amendment means, or you know, something that's involved with law. Okay, so but I'd like to get a copy of that. If you can make a copy and send that to mail, MAIL at nationallibertyalliance.org, I'd be interested in looking at that and see what kind of a court it is. See what the decision is. It's a written decision, huh?
Yeah, yes, it is by this lower court judge. What was that? What was that mail? Give me that mail one again, please.
It's just mail, MAIL at nationallibertyalliance.org. And all of our leadership gets a copy from that mail. You know, so those who want to look at it, they'll get a copy too. But I'm interested in looking at that.
Okay, making a note here.
Just put in it the decision, license decision, something like that. That'll kind of, you know, debacle it for me to realize I need to look at that. You know?
Okay. All right. Good.
That's it. Anything else?
I have a gentleman who's on. I conferenced him in. Marlon, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. This is Marlon, and he contacted me.
By the way.
Yeah.
Gerard, are you here? Are you back?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. After I finish with this caller, if you want to pipe in too, that's fine. Maybe you can make this caller. Okay, go right ahead. Back to you. As you were going to say.
Okay. Marlon, why don't you just jump in here?
She's been in the house. I want her out of the house. Because my grandfather died, then my grandmother died, and so the house was abandoned for about 2 years. I'm a truck driver. I've been going up there to Stockton from Fresno, and now she's not paying no rent. She ain't paid rent. It'll be 2 years in June. I mean, 1 year in June. I served a addiction.
Who is this person that's there? Is it a blood relationship or marriage?
No, it's not blood. It's not marriage. Not related at all.
They were living there with family, and then family
no.
got
no. No, my family, my cousin got her to move in. And my cousin knew her. I didn't.
Okay, but who owns the home now?
Nobody. My grandmother's deceased. I got the death certificate. My grandmother and my grandfather.
Who's the inheritor? Is that the whole family, or you, or who's the family?
We're really nobody. It's a family trust. I think, David, you could answer this a little bit more better than me, because I want her out of there, because I'm paying the tax.
Someone's got to own the home, and if there's someone that doesn't own the home, then you need to go deal with that problem and take ownership if you're the blood on that, you know, let's say you're the grandson or the son or whatever.
I'm the grandson of my grandfather. My grandfather, he's deceased, but he left it to his wife, and she died.
Okay, well, what a business. Who's next in line?
I'm next in line because I've been paying the taxes for 5 years, and I went up there and got the place cleaned up. The house was abandoned for about 2 years. 4 years hand on taxes. I didn't know that. But I went up there and I paid the taxes. I caught it up. But now she's just living there.
Go to the sheriff and have a dispossess notice taken. If you paid the taxes, then that's the beginning of taking the responsibility of that. They're probably not even going to ask you for proof of ownership of that home. You're going to just say, I'm the owner of that home, and I just paid the taxes, and I just discovered someone living in it. I want them out. And the sheriff will go over and take them out.
Okay.
Okay, you have to go through the process, talk with the sheriff. He'll tell you what you have to do. You may have to, since they've never paid rent and they're there lawfully and under that circumstance, they may be able to make a case, well, I was with someone in the family, they were here, and I was with them, but they left. Well, then you need to leave too, then probably is the case. I don't think they could make a legal argument. But if they could make a legal argument, then fine. Then you just go through the process. You have to serve a 30-day notice, and they have to get out. And then you call the sheriff will explain the process. And then the next step would be the sheriff go for dispossession.
Okay.
You probably have to go to a local court, you know, for the actual dispossess after you file the first 30-day notice. And if they default on the first 30-day notice, if you have to go that route, then you take it to the court, the local court. It could be village court, town court, whatever it's in. I don't know, city. But you take it to the local court, and it's a dispossess notice. And once you get that done with the judge, he signs the paper, then you take it to the sheriff. But you might be able to bypass all of it because they don't belong there at all. You know, you have no agreement.
Right.
You come back here, you oversee the house, paying the taxes, and all of a sudden you're discovering someone's living in it. I like them out, sheriff. They may be served without a court order.
All right, I served a 30-day notice back in June. She didn't say nothing. She didn't know it. That was the third notice I served.
And then if you serve the notices, then take it down to the local court there, and get a court order, then take it to the sheriff.
Okay.
You're serving them registered mail?
Yep, I'm going to serve them. No, I walked it in, put it in the hand.
Yeah, you can't serve it, though. You have to have a server.
I can't serve it myself.
No.
I could serve it.
You could serve it by mail, registered mail, but even with that, you'd need someone else to put it into the mailbox and swore that they put it in the mailbox. Into the mail to be served via the mail, you know. So the best thing to do is go talk to the sheriff, and they'll tell you exactly what under your situation the best way to proceed.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. With that, I guess we'll take the next caller. Thank you, Gerard. You got the mic?
Yeah. Okay. Next.
All right, Dave.
Yeah. Looks like it's Tim
Karen.
Or Karen, okay.
What state, Karen?
Are you on mute?
Yeah, you're on mute.
Oh, there we go.
Okay, don't sound like Karen to me.
Oh, hi, this is Karen. My husband and I are born in Indiana.
Okay.
Yeah, go right ahead. Gerard, you got the mic.
Yeah.
We listened last week, and it was very interesting. And since then, we made I had a hearing 2 weeks ago and a motion to dismiss. And what's interesting is Saturday, we got they basically ignored every affidavit. The judge just dismissed stuff. And it's just like, how do you hold them accountable? Like, you know, where do you start with to get, it's a family court. And, you know, trying to kind of step to holding them accountable or ask them to prove their authority for whatever the subject matter is or the...
You say it's a family court?
Yes.
Oh, so this is a matter between family members? I don't understand.
So it was like a 6-year divorce. It was in August of 2022, and I was ordered to pay off her house within 120 days. There was an equalization judgment, and then the judge just decided to call their arrears when there really wasn't arrears because I had always paid. But she just made up for my 21-year-old daughter. Anyways, so I went to sell my house in August of 2022. And she stopped the sale of the house. And that's the only money I had left because everything had... The judge only picks the affidavits they want. So they only went on hearsay so the court can make money. So, you know, it's... You know, literally, they just took all the money. So the only way I could meet the judgment was to sell the house. So I went to sell it, and she stopped the sale of the house. I wasn't able to pay that. So, and I had another job in another state. I got stuck here. So here we are. It's been a year. She just filed for contempt. And so, but I never got served. So I asked the court, hey, I never got served any opportunity to answer. And they never, their thing they sent me was they basically didn't ignore everything. I had an affidavit of status. They just said, no, that's not, we don't accept your affidavit of status. There was equalization where Terry wrote checks and there's all the evidence and exhibits. They ignored that. So I'm just like, how do you hold these bozos accountable? Like, how do you pull them into a real court? Or, you know, like, where do you start?
So if you're in family court, that's rough because they don't follow regular rules. Basically, they do pretty much what they want. You have to move, get them into the Supreme Court with a lawsuit. You know what I mean? You have to sue them. I mean, the family court, I think you should get it out of family court if you can.
Right.
Because they're not going to follow, and they're used to not following, and they're just plain lawless, you know?
Right.
Hey, one of our biggest woes is the family court system. I mean, you know, marriage, you've taken the government in as a partner in your marriage once you get a marriage license. Okay. Unfortunately, even all of the religious institutions that have the power and the authority to marry, they also carry the state license and require the state license also and all that stuff. So, you know, we've taken the government in as a partner. And the reason we've done that is because we're ignorant of the law. So it's a major problem. The family court, I think, is the most evil court we have. It's the most disgusting. And they're unlawful. They're operating outside the law. There's no due process. Nobody has ever allotted due process. They just do whatever they please. So I would follow what Gerard said. The only way you're going to do this is move it into state court and open up what's called a court of record and go that process. Now, you will not get a lawyer to do that for you because they follow their process and they think you're crazy doing that. And besides that, the judge would get real angry with the lawyer. What are you bringing this case in here for? You know, there'd be all kinds of problems. Unless there's something really valid there, then there are times when they can do it and maybe they do it. But, you know, usually when a lawyer's in there and involved, they walk into the family court, they're going to back off of a lawyer generally.
But right. So there's a couple interesting pieces in my case. The judge and the other, we had lawyers initially. Now neither one of us have lawyers. But when I did have a lawyer, her lawyer was the mentor or the judge was her mentor for 6 months as an extern, like for 6 months, and they worked together in the same office. That's one thing, which wouldn't be bad if they were equity and they had fairness.
But the second thing, they don't have equity, and they don't have law, you know, and equity is law also, but we don't want equity, we want law. But here's the thing, okay? Your people should know how to take care of their problems, their legal problems. They don't understand. That's the most powerful thing you can have is understanding the judiciary process. That's the most powerful thing you can have to protect your unalienable rights and to protect anything that, you know, from anybody, you know, sort of assaulting you in that fashion that you're stuck in. So the thing is people, we need to get these courses into the schools, into high school. Children in high school should learn the court process, understand common law, how things work, okay? We teach it here for people who are not in school, for education starts here, come down to court access in the common law, click on that, and see if this is something that's good for you. But, you know, it's going to take a while to go through this. I mean, you're not going to get it overnight. You got to learn how the process works, and it takes a little time to you know, go through all that and start to be able to, you know, write your papers and so on and so forth. But, again, you know, if anybody listening right now that doesn't have a legal problem, well, it's time to get prepared for one because at some point in your life you're probably going to have something come up that you're going to have to go into court, and you don't want to give a lawyer all your money in order to go into court because that's what they do. They take all your money. And the biggest problem, look at it, two people are going to break up. Don't go to court. Go to a counselor, start seeing what you can do to fix it. If you can't fix it and you're going to you're going to make the separation, then make a list of things that each one wants and work things out honestly, okay? Remember, that's your partner. So, you know, they're deserving of half of whatever was gotten during the time that you were married. And so you guys can sit down and figure it out. And the main thing to get the other side to figure it out is to say, look, you're going to go out and get a lawyer. I'm going to go out and get a lawyer because I can't find a lawyer. We're going to give everybody the lawyer.
But she won't talk because she won't be involved.
You got to make her understand that she's going to end up trusting
a trial.
All right. Well, then the only other way is to take it into your state court and fight it there. You got to open what's called a court of record, and a court of record is a jury trial, by the way. You really don't want a judge to make a decision on this because that brings them into equity, which is legislative law, and you know, and or it could be understood or appreciated in this case under law as really some like a arbitrator, okay, because that's what the judge would be the arbitrator, and then that decision would be final, and depending on the mindset of the judge could be problematic also, okay. Also, the relationship that the judge might have with the institution, particularly family court. Now, remember, the state court is connected with the family court. Family courts in the United in New York State, for instance, is a court of record. So you can file it right there and there, and then push it over into the state court outside of the family court structure. So you could work it that way. What state? So,
they have an oath of office, these judges. So I know they are not safe here. So you're saying
but you have to build a good case to be able to do that also. So, you know, if you have a good case and you can lay it out, then you can take it to the bond company, and the bond company will settle it.
All right. I got the bond. I got the insurance policy for the judge. But I got their bond. We made a the court made us do a guardianship agreement for my daughter, and part of the guardianship agreement that was required before we went to the divorce trial was no spousal support. And so 2 months later goes by, and then she asked the judge in the divorce trial to hear support, even though we already settled that there was no spousal support. And so the judge interfered with that contract. We had a bona fide contract, which went to the Supreme Court. The position held this as a bona fide contract, and they can't do anything about it. But I'm saying it literally cost me another $67,000 in legal fees because this judge, you know, decided to hear something that's already been decided and was interfering with the contract. That's probably one of my biggest pieces, besides the fact that this
lawyers are thieves, and very rarely do you get an honest lawyer. I know one or two. That's about it. Maybe it's just one. But you got to know the law to deal with this.
I can't believe it cost him $70,000 to have the contract upheld by another judge.
Now, that should not cost more since she kept arguing. It would have been over. I mean, 7 years ago, I offered her everything at the beginning, and she just wanted twice of what we had because she's delusional, literally. So, and then the judge,
if you could lay all this out in an affidavit and make it clear that you've given far more than she even deserves and this whole system is all screwed up, move it into the court of record. Go into your constitution, okay, and see if the family court is a court of record. It should be, and they don't act like one, okay? They bypass due process. Court of record proceeds according to the common law and gives you due process. It's a just court. And so, you know, this is not a case that is a status quo case where you're going up against the government. These are two individuals battling it out. So you could take it into your state court. Just move it into the state court to open up a court of record. Now, again, that's a jury trial, if that's what you want. Or you can try to trust the judge, which I wouldn't trust one as far as I can throw them anyway, because they're lawyers too. But if that's what you want to do, then it becomes an arbitration. You might get a good decision. I don't know. The other thing is to discover what the judge, you know, you can also, if you make such a good case, you can then move for summary judgment under common law, not even go into the jury trial. But you'll end up in a jury trial if not. But then you got to defend yourself. You got to understand the system, how the process works. You got to know, you got to be able to defend your case. And I strongly suggest that anybody who does this, that they understand and use PowerPoint, because PowerPoint is one of the strongest ways to be able to get a point across over to the jury, get your case heard really good. So you create a really nice PowerPoint. It gives them all the facts, all the information they need. It gets them visually. It gets them, you know, they hear it, they see it, and that makes it stronger. So, but anyway, take our course if you want. That's found under Education Starts Here, Court Access in the Common Law. You can read through this. You can get the first session for free. See how the session fell. The teaching court access.
I got a book. So
yeah,
very good book.
Okay, is that it?
I guess so. It just seems pretty helpless, but yeah.
I'm going to look at the courts tomorrow. It's Shane, we should have been educated. We all should have been educated in this.
I got hired for contempt in 2 months, and I'm basically trying to get them to either the fact that I went to sell the house and she stopped it should be an affirmative defense, or secondly, a counter suit that she caused me by stopping to sell the house. I lost the sale, lost my new job. You know, people moved in. The people already moved in, actually, so I literally had, you know, damages from that as well. So.
Well, it sounds like you can write a good case, but again, the problem is if you go with a lawyer, you know what that's going to entail.
Oh no, I'm representing myself. I fired my lawyer, you know, back in my year.
That was someone else's. We teach the common law, the court access in the common law. We also lay out how the court actually operates under civil law too, and how the rules work. So I mean, you need to know all this stuff.
Right.
Whatever you want to do.
Gotcha.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Next question. Looks like Tim. You're on mute. Go ahead. What state?
Connecticut.
Okay.
I wanted to refer to before first, apologize or whatever. I kind of went away for a moment, and then when I came back, I was already well, you know to what I'm referring to. Was a Tim on before? Okay. I guess not. Anyway, so John kind of, it seems like he kind of alluded to this question in part. Last week there was someone that asked something about you know, about they came across something where we could pay, that all our utilities or and everything bills were already paid, and then John said last week that it was true, and then but then it seemed like he kind of covered that partially today. So okay, so how is it that this is, you know, all our bills are already paid, and then it's dependent on our birth certificates that were sold to the that they use somehow as an instrument or whatever? How?
No, it's just restitution at the end of devolution. I mean, there is another thing. You could look at it from the fraud side. That's a whole different story. But no, it's just restitution. That would be the perspective. But back to you, Gerard.
No.
Restitution. Can you elaborate? Restitution. What?
That's what's going to happen after we go through devolution and the system goes down, and we're going to have kind of like a jubilee where they're going to forgive the debt, and you'll get restitution on the illegal taxes you paid and that type of stuff, illegal interest on mortgage. Most of it is illegal. You know, it's usury. So they have to, you know, under the rules of common law, for every injury there's a remedy. So that has to get remedied. You know, so you're gonna have money coming back on that stuff, but it could take a while before that happens. You know what I mean? I don't know exactly what the schedule is going to be on that.
Okay, but it was said that somehow that our bills were already paid, the bills that we pay now, and that's
a hey, Gerard. I know what he's talking about. I think we've discussed it too. I know you and John know about it, but. If you look
about the bank going to the Fed window and getting paid on the mortgage.
Yeah, if you look up A4V, that's how I discovered it. A4V, the number 4, the letter A and the letter V. A4V, Winston Shrout, if you remember this guy, Winston Shrout, and he's promoted an NLA paper before. He covers this material, exactly what this fellow is talking about. That all the utility companies are double dipping on our straw man SESTA KV accounts. And so it is true, it is all true, but what John and Gerard are saying is it's just more relevant what they're saying, because we're getting to that point in time where this is all going to be done away with. But if you want to understand the process, look up A4V and a fellow named Winston Shrout. He'll explain it. He's not the only one. You'll find others explaining it, but they are double dipping on us, and it is a slavery system, and I yield.
Okay, good.
Yep. A slavery system in what?
I yield. I give way.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
So
if he's looking to do it for the SSQ accounts, I would strongly suggest not to bother. Look, again, restitution is the key. We've been injured. We're all casualties of war, literally. We've been at war since before we were born, since we were born, let's say, and many before a lot of us were born. The thing is, I could imagine there's going to be a lump sum that goes to every person in the United States. Okay, we'll get a lump sum. But there's a collection process. There's a seizure process. There's properties to be seized. There's gold. There's silver. There's liquidity. There's all kinds of things, stocks, bonds, companies, corporations, all that from the elite that they own are going to be sold off. Because once you catch, as Trump puts it, okay, you rob the diamond store and you get caught, you got to give the diamonds back. Well, they got to give everything back. Everything they're living on, all their islands, their mansions, it's all gone. They're going to jails. A lot of them hopefully will hang at the end of a short rope. But in any event, all their properties, all their corporations, all their liquidity, all their gold, all their silver, all their stocks, bonds, property, everything. Okay, so what is the government, what are we going to do with all that? But it's not just America, because the whole world has been injured by this. Everybody's going to benefit from this because we're all casualties of war. So there's a basic lump sum I think will probably be decided on that everyone will get. Since America carried the heaviest part of the burden all these years and stuff and have been the most abused ultimately in a different way, other people abused more physically, that's terrible too. But in any event, I would imagine that America is going to get the lion's share to some degree. But again, everybody has been injured. Everybody's going to be restored. Now, maybe there's other things that some people have a higher injury than others. Maybe we'll have to sign off and say, okay, that's good. I'm good with that number and I'm walking away. Or I'm not good with that number. I'm going into the courts. I want more. Whatever the case may be. I don't know how this is going to end up or how they're going to do it. But when they take all this stuff away, certainly the government can't keep it. They're not there for profit or for, they haven't been injured. Matter of fact, that's the weapon, that's the tool that was used to injure us was the government. So if the courts are brought back, that's why it's so important to bring these courts back to just courts as quick as we can at the same time, because then the just thing will be done. And a nation will be only as just as their courts are. And you look to see what America is doing around the world, you see how evil we are. Well, that's we're as just as our courts are, and the American people are just asleep and on for the ride. But hopefully, a lot of people seem to be waking up. Hopefully, waking up enough to actually step up and do something. Let's get back to taking control of our government and controlling them, government by consent, as we read about in the Declaration of Independence. That's what we have. That's what we need to do. Freedom is not free. You have to pay for it. You pay for it by blood. And that's what we got to do right now. I think that's going to be taken care of for us, but now we're going to have to be paid for it for our time. We got to give time, a couple hours a month into this process of government by consent. And if we don't do it, then we don't deserve what we have.
And then the implicit point is all that wealth that they have and all those companies and so forth and so on, they were able to obtain those in quotation marks because they stole the money or whatever they needed to obtain those things from us, the gold and the silver, they stole it all from us, from the people. And that's right, huh?
Yeah, that's correct.
Drugs. Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, one quick note. I forgot to tell you what the A4V stands for if you wanted to look it up. It stands for accept for value. So people used to, they close this loophole, and you'll hear Gerard talk about this. Once someone tries something in the court, the court will figure it out, and they'll close that loophole, so you can't use it anymore. But people used to sign their utility bills except for value, and the court would accept that and not charge them the double charge because it would come from their straw man account. So that's the basis of it. But I absolutely agree with John and Gerard. You don't need to mess with this. But if you want to understand it, you can just go look up A4V, and you'll get it from there. I yield.
Yeah.
something for value. What was that again? A
acceptance for value.
Acceptance for value. Okay, thank you, then. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. You're welcome. All right, let's get to the next caller. That is Ross.
Hello. I'm wondering, I listened to a podcast from We the People, and it said the Constitutional Project is proposing new amendments to the Constitution.
Say that again. I didn't quite get the beginning of it. You're like really coming in loud. You're kind of breaking my speaker out.
The name of the podcast was called Constitutional Drafting Project by the National Constitutional Center.
I think
that's a good organization. If you're saying it's the right one, the NCCS.
Yes.
Yeah, the NCCS. Whatever they're teaching is rock solid. So I don't know exactly what exactly you're talking about now on this.
It's about a constitutional drafting project.
Drafting. I don't know what that's all about. I'd have to look into it. If you got a link, send it to mail@nationallibertyalliance.org.
I haven't even looked at it yet, but they were talking about changing the amendment process to be...
Well, look, you can't change the amendment process unless you're talking about changing the amendment process from the illegal process that they've been trying to use to the constitutional process. But look, if it's NCCS, they're not going to try to change anything in the Constitution. Maybe that's a name close to the same thing, but the NCCS, which stands for National...
Constitutional Center.
National Center for Constitutional Studies is NCCS.
If that's them, I found that they've been rock solid. Okay, I bought a lot of books from those people. I get my Constitution handbooks from those people. I bought the real Thomas Jefferson, the real George Washington, the real Benjamin Franklin. I bought The Making of America, 5,000 Year Leap, and some other books. All those books were really, really powerful. The organization is great. They're doing a great job. So I doubt they're doing anything wrong. Not that they can't make a mistake, but I doubt they're doing anything wrong. They're definitely not looking into changing anything in the Constitution. That's for sure.
Oh, it's the National Constitutional Center in Philadelphia.
That's different.
I don't know, but Eric, does that sound like the right one, or Gerard?
No, it just sounds a little bit different.
Similar sounding, but different.
Yeah, similar sounding, but different. And to change the amendment process in the Constitution would require a new amendment, and I yield.
Right.
We don't have people with enough wisdom. We don't have enough statesmen. It's not the right time to do anything. First of all, let's reinstate the Constitution first. Use it for a while and then figure out if there's something needs to be done at that point.
Amen.
But right now, we're not even using it.
Oh, it's the person who has this is called Jeffrey Rosen.
Jeffrey Rosen?
Yes.
It doesn't ring a bell with me.
No bell here either.
Me neither.
You heard of the podcast called We the People?
Well, again, there's an organization called We the People run by Robert Schultz, and we know him personally, and he backs up what we're doing. We're trying to help him out and so on and so forth, but that's not the same people, though. So I don't know who that is.
You got a link for that, Ross?
Yeah, I send it to you guys.
Is it an easy link? Can you just say what it is?
Oh, it's called, if you Google it, it's NCC. It's National Constitution Center. It's a nonprofit set apart by Congress put in place.
What's the URL? NCC what? I put it NCC.
It's abbreviation for National Constitution Center.
Yeah, is it ncc.org.com.net? What is it?
.org, I think. It's
It's constitutioncenter.org. I think I just found it. It's the National Constitution Center, and it's in Philadelphia.
Yes. And they just had a discussion about proposing new constitutional amendments.
And I would run like H.E.
That's the problem, is that they don't want the old constitution anymore.
That's bad. That's dangerous.
Yes. There's nothing wrong
with the old constitution, except for we got to follow it. I mean, other than the stuff like the 16th Amendment and some other stuff, but that's easy enough. You don't have to throw the whole thing away, you know?
Yeah, our problem is constitutional illiteracy. Here's the thing. The best argument against any amendment is they don't honor any of the amendments that we have right now. You think if you add another one, all of a sudden, magically, they're going to start honoring them? It's silly. It's silly.
Right.
Yeah, I was thinking we need to amend the Article 1, Section 2, Clause 2, and take some of the stuff like 2/5 of a person out of that clause.
That kind of thing is really not even in play anymore. That's considered I forget the name. It's like the dead amendment, because it's not even in play anymore.
It's not an amendment. It's Article 1, Section 2/3 of that section.
Okay, the dead. I think it's the dead clause. Then it's no longer in play. You'll see that there are dates on certain things within the Constitution, but this is no longer a concern. It's really irrelevant.
It is the 16th Amendment canceled out that old clause.
The 16th Amendment? That was income tax, was it not?
Yes. That's what the third clause talking about direct taxation. The only way they can tax you directly with your representation in the House of Representatives.
Yeah, well, we know it's unconstitutional on many levels. The whole income tax scam.
Yes. The article I was talking about was, I don't know why it's mute. Shouldn't be mute.
I don't know. So anyway, what do you want to know? If they were a good organization? I don't think that we should be changing anything with the amendments.
It's because this National Constitution is founded by Congress. That's what it was.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't sound like it's something that we would want to get involved in, you know.
Agreed.
It's because it was established. It was a good organization until people messed with it. Original charter.
Well, look, if I'm on the right page here, and this is it. You know, they got here the Constitution Drafting Project, the discussion of 5 new amendments. Legal scholars, you know what legal scholars mean?
Bar attorney.
Bar attorney. That's what it means.
Yes.
So we don't want anything to do with it. Here's what I do with them. Hit that little X. I'm gone.
Yeah, I don't know why they are trying to change that. It's unconstitutional. Because I think they want to amend the Constitution, to make it easier to amend the Constitution than it's the one we have right now.
It's the enemy, no matter how you put it. But with that, Ross, we got to move on. We got a couple
okay.
more running through.
Yeah. All right. We're almost out of time here. Let's go. Next question. Alicia. Go ahead. You're on mute, Alicia.
Hello. How are you, you guys tonight?
Good, good. What's up?
Can you hear me good?
You're very low for me.
Okay.
There you go. Ahead.
Okay, can you guys hear me better now?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. My question is, I'm calling from Georgia, and I am and received a summons for a defaulted credit card, and I was listening to the other 20-year-old was listening to some people on the internet trying to sell their product in common law, and I thought I was correctly challenging a jurisdiction of a summons, but I incorrectly did it and gave an answer to the summons.
Okay.
And I have now received, of course, a notice of hearing and a certificate of service. My question is, and I did kind of hear someone touch on this in another call, in regards to with the mortgage and the credit cards with in regards to the contracts. The evidence that has been provided is not a contract, but it is a account summary. The last.
Look, I want a case like this. First of all, they don't have the contract available. They never do. So if you just insist on let me see the contract and stick to the principles, ultimately they won't be able to provide you what the law says that they should be able to provide you with. They won't be able to prove that debt.
Okay.
You know, the other thing they'll try to do, because they did this with me, is they said, well, we have this person that was talking to him over the months and has firsthand knowledge that it is his debt and he accepts the debt and all that. And they had nobody.
Right, okay.
It was a lie, you know, they didn't produce the person that they claimed that I had talked to acknowledged
right.
the debt. So I just denied the debt, and I demanded strict proof thereof, and I stuck to my guns. And they kept sending different lawyers in, but eventually the judge ruled in my favor, you know, with prejudice, basically, so they can't come back.
Okay.
So if you got the wherewithal to stick it out and go to all the hearings, you should win. The judges don't like finding for the people because they work for the corporations, and so it's an uphill battle. But, if you go to all the hearings that they give you and you keep demanding the strict written proof and the wet ink signature, they're not going to be able to supply that, ultimately. So it's kind of a slam dunk case if you think about it.
You know, yeah, and also, look, at every case requires a affidavit, and I don't think they provide an affidavit and a proof of claim. So they have to lay that proof of claim out. They got to detail it, the exact amount, what it is, and it's got to be done in affidavit form. If that doesn't exist, then there is no court case. And what was the status on that with yours, Gerard? Did they come up with any kind of an affidavit on that case, or are you aware of anyone? Any affidavits?
No, they had a
They just had a, what did the attorneys do, like a sworn statement that said they had knowledge, but it was like, it was not.
Yeah, that's not a proof of claim. That's just a bunch of junk people fall for and they say, oh my goodness, they got me, and they pay the money. So whatever you want to do.
Right, so they never really had anything like that.
Look, the biggest problem with the credit cards is usury. It's against the law. It's unlawful, okay, under common law. But, of course, they're under civil law, and therein is the problem. And lawyers believe we're under civil law. So we're under a de facto law. And as long as people believe in that law, we'll continue to live underneath it. Until the people rise up and realize it's de facto, let's get back under the de jure law, the common law. Now we got something going. But it's up. Look, reality is the way one perceives it. And unfortunately, the mass believes and perceives. So this is a major problem. It's hard to get people. But again, let's get back to the basics. As Jefferson said, we don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority that participates. You know, you build up a committee of safety up to 50 to 100 people, and it'll grow and grow and grow and grow and grow for them. But trust me, but you know, you get yourself going, and now you can start taking control of all these things and enforce the law. Because it's up to the people to do it. And we don't have sheriffs that are educated either. That's the other problem. People need to be educating their sheriff. People need to come to our site, Highlight Sheriff, come down to join our campaign for constitutional sheriffs. Buy your sheriff the book, Government by Consent. Follow the process we have here. It's a $39 investment. Okay, and I guess whatever shipment is for Amazon, but you get him a copy of that book. That's the beginning. And, you know, you visit the sheriff, you give him a gift, spend 5 or 10 minutes, say, I'd like to talk to you about this at a later date. Hopefully you get your committee of safety going and you have him come to the committee of safety, and now he's preparing for that by reading the book. There's a large chapter in there for sheriffs, and it empowers sheriffs. And then how sheriffs need to empower other sheriffs, the sheriffs next door, and next door to that. Sheriffs need to bind together to work to take control of their counties. So, anyway.
Okay. Oh, that was my only question, and I appreciate the time and advice from both of, for all of you. I thank you, and I'm going to stick to the contract, and then Mr. John, you said a proof of claim in an affidavit form, in the form of an affidavit.
Right. If they want to collect something off you, you want a proof of claim, you want details, you want a proof of claim, and you want a certified, you want an affidavit form, and that's what you need. Now I wouldn't pursue them for it. You go into court, you bring that up in court. There is no affidavit here. There is no proof of claim. What are they talking about? What do I owe? Well, did you use this card or this thing? Look, I don't know these people from Adam. You better be careful. Don't let the judge talk. Okay? You know, don't let the judge question you. If you know, you want to be careful on the other end of this. I mean, but you know, it can be said when the judge talks starts to ask questions, you ask, are you representing the other side or something? Or are you my lawyer? You know, what's going on here? Because the judge shouldn't be saying anything. But again, you need to change it into a court of record at the same time, and then you can move for summary judgment at some point in time. That's a protection, but that's a jury trial now. Okay? And I don't know whether in a credit card thing, whether that would be a good idea.
Okay.
But you're kind of stuck with a judge. But you can put the judge's feet to the fire, and if he breaks the law and he violates your right of due process or any of your rights, you can pull his oath and bond. And one of the things we the people need to do, and we've got to get together to do this, you know, if people don't get together, we can't do anything. But we got to get together to do this. We need to require, oaths and bonds are there for us, to protect us. That's what it's for. But they hide them. They should be posted somewhere where you can go up and look this person up that's working for the government. There's their oath. There's their bond company. You can get a copy of their oath. You can contact their bond company, and you can deal with your problem through the bond company. Okay? And so if he violates your rights, that's one way you can deal without having to go to court.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you,
Alicia. You can go to the welcome page and scroll down to the archives. I can't tell you where you'll find it, but we've discussed this many, 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 many times over the years. And so, if you just go back, I think John's going there right now. If you just go back and you'll find it. You'll find it for sure, and you'll learn this stuff just by hearing it over and over again. So just go back to our archives, pick any year. I promise you, we'll discuss this many times over and over and over again, and you can learn like that. I yield.
Okay, thank you, Eric. And thank you, Alicia. We're going to go to our last question here. It is 11 o'clock. It looks like Ricardo. Let me open you up. Okay, big guy, you're on. What state are you in?
North Dakota.
Okay. What's going on?
Just a little bit of continuation of last week. Boy, I've listened tonight. I got so many questions. I don't have time for them, so I'll save them for later. But I don't know if you remember the conversation we had last week. It was about leases that I'm in. I'm in the fourth year, or the fifth year being renewed. And I just wanted to get, first of all, can you define for the audience, myself included, what is devolution? Define that.
Devolution. There's a good definition on devolution. Where do we have that?
Is it in the site? I can look it up there. You don't have to give it here. Then.
Yeah, I think it's been in there more than once, but that's
it up there on the page right now. It's
okay,
underneath today's issues, and you come down to devolution. You can click on that. Also, for a lot more information and detail, the deals that things that are going on on a regular daily basis, you can go to Q News Anon. Okay, we got that. And there's a third one in here. Let me see. That'll give you more information on this stuff. Let's see. Brunson, COVID interviews. Okay. Well, I guess those are the two major ones. I thought there was something else in here, but there's a lot of good information through this whole thing on today's issues. I mean, Anarchy USA is extremely important to take a look at, see what's going on. A lot of this is done by Griffin. Ed Griffin. You can read our mandamus to the Supreme Court, New World Order, the QAnon News, Q News Anon, shall I say.
Okay.
Anyway,
going back to the leasing, I wanted to find out what would be the best way to handle it. I don't know if you remember what we talked about last week, but I'm in a situation where she was building us. I'll just kind of review real quick. When we signed on this lease, it was in the lease, specifically said that we're responsible for getting our name put in for the utilities, for the gas, for the electric,
right, heating. I remember, and there was a collection of people on the same bill and people paying a piece. That's unlawful.
Okay. Does that fall under the weights and measures type?
Well, I would imagine it would, but the bottom line.
If it's the electric company, I would call the electric company and let them examine the meter, how she has it set up. Dale?
The electric meter we have in our name. What the issue is the water. The water, sewer, and the garbage. I've never gotten a bill. She said she was going to have it put in her name. She lied from the get-go. I kept asking for, I just need to know a statement. You're billing me for water. I don't even know how much I use. That's not my water. I've never used that much water. I said that to her. I need to say a statement itemizing what my part of it is for Unit C. Well, it's in your AB property account. She's a property manager, okay? She's not the landowner, and she's a piece of work, I guess, put it bluntly. And she lies all the time, and I said, I'm going to pay for what you can show me that I used. My lease specifically says that I'm responsible. You said you were going to put it in our name. It's not. What are we going to do? Then I need some kind of a statement, and never got it. And all she did was just. One fourth of what she was charged for the whole thing. So I went to the utilities department, got a year back, and what was going on. And then I said, I want to put this lease in my name, for the water. She said, you can't. There's only one meter. I said, we're getting billed for water I don't even use. I have no idea what I'm using. She can't be doing that. Well, she's doing it. And I would kind of get it to where we get her to force her to put meters in here, but they don't want to spend the money. Well, the city utility guys came over in review. He said, you got a broken main. And we're in Unit C. Unit A has the meter. There's only one meter here. Okay, that kind of answered a lot of questions. So why is she hiding it? And I talked to he came over, they shut our water off one day, and it was like 10:30 in the morning. I said, what's going on? Well, you got a broken main. Is it before or after the meter? He said, it's after the meter, so the landowner, the property owner, is responsible for it. So where's the broken line? It's, well, it's somewhere after the meter in Unit A. Unit A has the meter. And he said, well, they were going to be putting new meters in, but it's only for lines that are 5/8 in size. Yours is not. No, ours is a 5/8 inch meter, and that go into the individual unit. The main one coming in is 1.5. So he wasn't looking at the other part of it. Because I went into some other units that do have the exact same setup that we do, but they each have individual meters. But what I want to do is the best way to handle all this is, I mean, we've been paying $50, $60 a month more than what I've ever used. I've talked to other homeowners that pick showers, half-hour showers, 4, 5, 7 of them a day, and with kids and that. And I said, what's your highest water bill? I said, the highest water bill I've ever had is 8,200 gallons. We're getting billed for 14,000 and 15,000 gallons just for our unit alone. And holy
cow.
That's
because you got a broken main.
Well, yeah. I wanted to get some evidence, just get all the other ones. They don't say anything because she's such a witch. She'll threaten to pull the lease. So what I tried to do is withhold. I went and looked at the North Dakota Century Code that if a landlord doesn't fulfill their part of the agreement, like, for example, the water, the fixing the fences or fixing whatever appliance and stuff, you can have it fixed and deduct it off and move out, off your rent. And I said, well, I'm not ready to move out yet, but you guys gave me some ideas. I have a record of everything that I've done. And when I am planning to buy a house and move out when our lease renews, give her 60-day notice that she requires. But now here's my question. When somebody breaches a lease, or is a lease a contract? Does that fall under the?
Absolutely.
Okay. So now what happens is if either party violates their term of the lease, their condition, their performance? Because I was taught in law classes in college. So I was thinking about being a lawyer until I figured I was a good old boys club. I said, no way. I consider myself a man of integrity. I'm not going to learn how to lie. I already know how to do that. And I'm not going to steal from people. But that was my thing. But I learned a lot. He was a common law lawyer. I mean, he was all in favor of tort reform and all this kind of stuff. And the judges are not doing their job, what they're supposed to do. And so he had said that a contract is an agreement between two parties to perform. If either one of them breaks their responsibilities in the contract, it's null and void and can't be enforced. Now, does that kind of come under the Constitution or the anything repugnant to the Constitution is null and void and dead on arrival? I just kind of wonder where I should go with this thing. And what I want to do is I want to make a list of all this stuff. And it's going to be hundreds and hundreds.
Anything like that is considered fraud, which vitiates the whole contract. It doesn't exist. That's just basic common law. Contract law, basically.
Go down to the water and sewer department and tell them that you're being billed too much money. What's going on? Could they check into things?
Oh, he's being billed without a meter.
Doesn't matter. He's got an address. It's got to be going somewhere. And
well,
if it's
no,
going
I already
to
know
one
that.
Address,
I've already,
one
I've already done that. Huh? I've already done that. I've got copies of the bills for not only this unit, but the other. There's
right, well, then,
five
you know,
more.
If you get all your evidence together, you should be able to go to small claims court and deal with this.
Exactly. That's the easiest, small claims court. I think you can go up to $5,000 or something there.
Yeah, you have to check it out. For instance, I know here in where I live, if I go to the town court, I think it's $3,000 or something like that. But if I go to the county court, Or even there's a city court that I can go there too in Poughkeepsie, but if I go to the county or to the Poughkeepsie court, really not the county but the Poughkeepsie court, city, which you might be able to do a city nearby. I don't know how that works there, but here in New York it worked that way, and they go up to like $6,000. So.
So my thing is I want to kind of something that I could send to her. To tell her that now she's also violated my First Amendment rights by telling me where, what, how I can do, what I can't do. She's trying to control my behavior, and she did it. I've talked to other people who've been here longer than I have in this complex, and every year she adds something in her that's going to be to her advantage and to screw the renters out of. And so she's been constantly adding things. But one of the things she put in the last time around, you can only have two cars in your driveway. I got room for three, but you only have two in your car. I'm going to have your car towed. So she uses threats and blackmail and whatever you want to call it. So I've documented that stuff as well. Well, you signed the lease, and I said, so did you. And you can't be controlled. What am I? I'm not. Well, you're blocking, and I'm not blocking any traffic. Nobody's interfered with me. Block. I have two minivans and one little puddle jumper car, and I can fit them all in that driveway. I've got four vehicles. My garage is for storage. I came out of a.
Well, is it in the lease? You can only have two cars.
Yeah, that's what she put in there. She added it on there this year, this last time around.
Well, next time it's time to renew, you just cross it out, and then you don't sign it. You know, you make the changes you want.
Okay.
That's much binding. It's like you agreed to it.
Well, yeah, if you make a change on a lease and you cross something out, you want to put initial next to it, and then you make sure that lease is signed and copied correctly.
And then she'll refuse to renew the lease.
Well, there's a problem. So I don't know. You know, at that point, maybe you want to move out. I don't know.
Oh, no, I am going to now.
Look it. Hold on. Look, there's what's called the grandfather law, and this may fall in here too anyway. If you've been living in a lease with X amount of cars in your driveway for all these years, and all of a sudden you have a conflict, and it doesn't matter whether there's a conflict or not, and all of a sudden they're putting this other thing into your lease, when there's no reason for putting it under the lease other than giving you a hard time and you can make that case, then you can fall under that particular situation, which is kind of like the grandfather law. So that's what you want to look into, though.
Okay. All right. Because what I'm going to do is I'm going to give her a 60-day notice. I'll pay that rent for that first of the 60 days, and then the last one I'm just going to withhold it. I'm just not going to pay anything. And I'm going to send her a bill for all the stuff that I did, and I'm going to tell her that I'm going to deduct it, because the Sentry Code says I can do that. And I could deduct it off if she hasn't paid. Well, I had to remove snow. That's in the lease. She's supposed to remove snow. And that's part of my lease agreement. Well, there was a couple of winters, a couple of storms we had 3 feet of snow in our driveway.
Send her a bill.
I've got a 24-hour emergency room nurse living on one side, and I have a night employee working. My wife and I, we work nights, and we got to get to work the next morning. Well, the streets were cleared up, but she didn't have the. Yeah, well, anyway. So I kept record of that.
Stop. You can send her a bill on that. If she's required and you had to do it, you can send her a bill. That's lawful. And you can collect that also in a different case. In other words, you can keep going back to small claims court for each issue. The other thing that I think you can make a case out of is in the Constitution itself, Article 1, Section 9, let me see what clause this would be. It would be 1... to clause 3, no bill of attainder or ex post facto law shall be passed. Now, it's not an ex post facto law, but the point is you put this in your lease. Did you realize it was in your lease before you signed it or after you signed it?
Let's see. Well, the three car thing, she put that in there before the last one. She had asked, we had to put an issue by all this stuff that she was doing.
Before you signed it, did you know it was in there?
I signed the lease, UCC 1-308, on preservation of my rights under protest.
Did you read the lease, or did you assume that it was the same as the year before?
I assumed it was the same as before, and then after I got it.
Here's the thing. Why did she put it in there? That's the question. If it's not causing a problem anywhere, anybody else got three cars in their driveway?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. That's another thing.
Well, some of them have four.
There's no reason for it. That's the point. What's your reason
for
doing
this? And I've got pictures of it.
But, well, anyway, that's your case. I think you can make a case, and you might be able to build upon the Constitution here, too. And that's where the grandfather law comes in, too, I think, anyway, the logic of the grandfather law, which is common law.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, so then the last part of it is there can she control her behavior?
No, that's why you're in court.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing.
I mean, you know.
She's a control freak. I pissed her off.
Eventually you have to just leave because she's never going to get better.
I know that. That's why I stayed as long as I did until we got to the point where we can get to a house. And we've now gotten that where we can get to a house. We got good incomes now. And, of course, housing in this market has just gone crazy high. And what I could have gotten 4 years ago for $250,000, now $400,000. I mean, you know, I talk about a little appreciation. People were coming here from California, from down south, and Texas, and offering people $30,000, $40,000 cash more than what they were asked for the house. It was a real war bidding to get houses in this market. You know, the thing about the economy, it ain't happening here in Fargo. People are crying for help. everybody's crying for help. And they're paying really well. I mean, a lot of these places, 5-6 years ago, they're only paying $10-$12 an hour, now paying $18 and $20 an hour, and they still can't get help. The kids don't want to work. And there's more to it than that, in my opinion. I think it's all these legalized murders that they've been taking place for the last 50 years has been the reason why we don't have any workers here. And another reason about these, all these flooding all these people across the border down south, that's where the IRS is going to get their 87,000 armed, whatever you call those guys, the tax collectors. And how come nobody's talking about that? You know, what is the real reason for doing that?
I don't think they did it. I think they killed it. I think that bill died, didn't it?
But even so, they're trying to get as many, and then they find out, too, that from a guy, he was down there. He was actually filming it, and he's just a guy like you and me. He just went down there on his own, took pictures, and these people, there's just thousands of young military-aged boys, men coming in here. What the heck? And they're coming by themselves. And I can see the families with the kids and that kind of thing. You know, all right, I think we should try to find a way to get them over, because I've talked to a lot of those people, and you know, personally, when I was trucking, I talked to them whose relatives are from these countries are coming from. He said, "We do anything we can to get, especially the girls. We got to get them over here, because in those countries, girls have absolutely no protection whatsoever. They're raped, they're beaten, they're violated in every way, shape, or form. Here, at least in America, women are protected, and they get taken care of." And a lot of these countries, no, it's just kids are to be seen and not heard. So I personally have witnessed that stuff in Ukraine. I was in Moldova. Women have, they want to get over here to America. This is the one place they know that women do have some rights. In a lot of these countries, they have nothing.
And they so do. I can understand,
but yeah. These millions of people they're bringing over here, you know they've got an ulterior motive what they're going to do.
Of course.
And it's all for harm. But the last thing I wanted to ask is, this is kind of short. Hopefully, this is going to be a short one. I was trying to write down questions. So it's going here. Can we do our own adoptions? Do we have to have a lawyer to do adoptions?
I would imagine you do. I can't even advise you on that. I don't know.
I mean, is there anything in the common law court that would talk about?
I'm sure you could do it under common law. Now, will they recognize it? That's the other thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, if you can prove that the parents signed off and all that, you might have a leg to stand on. But you know, as far as you know, getting a regular court to recognize it, you know.
Well, in both cases, I have my wife from Philippines. She's got three kids. One of them right now, he'll be 20 in March, and the other two they're 12 years old right now. They're twins, a boy and a girl. And as far as the parents signing off on it, they're dead. Two different parents, two different dads for the kids.
Yeah, and, but the mother is there of these kids. She's your wife, right?
She's with me. Yes, she's.
Yeah, I don't think it'd be a problem to get to have them adopted.
Lawyers, they want $10,000 to.
That's ridiculous. I think if you go in, I mean, does your wife have her citizenship, or is it still pending, or what?
We're in the process of getting that going. She could have done it 2 years ago. She thought she had to wait until she got her green card. Well, we have a friend that works in the immigration for citizenship.
If she gets her citizenship, it'll be a lot easier to adopt
a
kid at that point.
Yes.
That's what I would do. I don't think you need a lawyer. I think you could stand in front of a judge and just do it.
Okay.
You know, ask around the immigration offices and stuff. There might be somebody that can actually help you. You know, they may actually help get that done. Okay.
Because that's kind of what I wanted to do. So I've been waiting to do it. It's a simple process, and then for her to get her citizenship, it's just that she could have done this 2 years ago. She thought she was going to have to give up her Philippines. No, in the United States, you can have dual citizenship. She didn't get that. I told her that right away. We've been married now for we've been together for 7 years, and we've been married for six. And she was so afraid that if she becomes a citizen, then she has to give up her citizenship. And so, no. And so we kind of got that finally straightened out, and then we've got the application, and now we're just waiting for her to get her appointment for the interview. So anyway, that's kind of where I'm at. So there was a 6 or 7 years ago, there was a move, at least here in North Dakota, and it was a nationwide thing. They were going to put together, you mentioned something earlier tonight, John, about attempts to do some constitutional amendments. And the one that I was going to be in part of, I wanted to be on that committee for, what's the first step? The Convention of States? And then there's the whatever, it's a two-step process is what it was. But they were going to put together an amendment for limiting terms for senators and representatives, and there's some other stuff about being lobbyists and some other things that are just completely outlawed. Is there anything going on with it? I haven't heard anything about it in the last couple of years. Since COVID is where the last time I heard anything about it.
Right now, I'd be afraid of amending the Constitution at all, because once they get in there, they may not stop. And you got a lot of crazy people that's
for sure.
Running things, and I don't think it's a good time to mess with it, because it's serving its purpose when they follow it. They don't even follow it. But, you know, I mean, not to say that we don't have work to do, but I don't think now's a good time because of all the chaos. You can't trust these lawyers, and you know the lawyers are going to take over it. And so I wouldn't even want to go there.
Okay. All right. That's fine.
All right.
So maybe the whole thing's just kind of died off. All right. So then.
Okay. Thank you very much.
That's all I got. That's it. Yep. I'm done. Thank you. I yield.
Yeah. Okay.
I learned a lot tonight. I was writing down lots of notes, so. But the I just wanted to give you an update on, too, that that militia thing, I've sent down to about 15 people that I want to get on that. I haven't heard back from them yet. I just did it over this weekend, and then I'm going to follow with some phone calls to get them on. But is that militia thing kind of teach us how to be useful to the county sheriffs?
I don't know what militia thing you're talking about.
Oh, okay. Well, there's Brent...
Oh, Brent's course?
Yes, Brent's course, common law. Common lawyer.
Yeah, common law lawyer.
Got that thing going, and I was talking with, I forget one of the other people.
I would ask him directly.
Yeah. And then, it's a kind of a neat little deal. It's $175 per person, but if you get 10 or more in a group, and then I'm going to kind of be a self-appointed organizer, I collect the money, then we get it for $20. It's a 12-week course. And they're recording it all, so you can go back and listen to it again later.
Right, right.
And so I looked up online there, but didn't tell a whole lot about it. And I thought, well, maybe there's something else that's going on. But I thought it started February 8th, but they told me it was February 1, so I'm 2 weeks behind.
I don't know.
Okay. All right. Well, that's it. I'm done. Good enough.
Thank you.
Yeah. Have a good week. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everybody. Thanks for showing up, and we'll see you here next week. Same time, same place. Thanks.